Just to let you know before we get started, this episode features a rather violent legend. Welcome to Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. About 3 miles northwest of the village of Bursalee lie the ruins of Cullahill Castle, a small two-story structure on a nondescript hillock. Crumbled and overgrown, the castle does not resemble the seat of great deeds anymore. And indeed, its fraught history has been largely forgotten in centuries past. But local legends grew up around this place, of a tyrant who ruled over Cullahill, inflicting violence and fear throughout the surrounding countryside. The tyrant was a woman who killed lovers nightly, who executed her own sister, and was eventually only killed herself by a lucky shot through a small window. The legend may now be almost forgotten, but people nearby still recall. For who could forget the terror of Sheila na Gcaoire? The legend of Sheila Dwyer, or Sheila na Gcaoire as she became known, has stayed remarkably close to the Tipperary countryside where it was first told. From the 13th century, the district of Alay, where Cullahill Castle stood, was ruled over by the Dwyer family, who spent the next 300 years attempting to defend it from the Burke clan, a Norman family. Both clans owned large swathes of land in the surrounding countryside. Sheila's brother Dermot resided in Clonyharp, while the Burkes lived in a castle in Bursalee and also had holdings in Carabaha. However, Cullahill Castle was a prize that both families sought, and their battles to secure it were brutal and bloody. While her brother Dermot was alive, little was heard about Sheila or the legend that she would become. Dermot led his family against the Burkes for many years. The Dwyers were fierce fighters, known to commit acts of great brutality. For their most bitter enemies, it was told that the Dwyers had a large barrel, studded on the inside with long iron spikes. Once, when the Dwyers attacked the Burke stronghold at Bursalee Castle, they succeeded in making the elderly Richard Burke and his wife prisoners. Richard is said to have been about 90 years of age, and his wife was over 80. The Dwyers conveyed the pair to Cullahill Castle, and while his poor wife watched, old Richard Burke was forced inside the barrel. It was sent rolling down the steep hill on which the castle stood, an act which was repeated until the prisoner showed no sign of life. Richard's wife, according to the legend, was set free and allowed to return to her people to tell the tale of her husband's awful death and warn them against any future attempts to cross the clan. So yes, it's pretty safe to say that the Dwyers were a family to fear. However, at last the might of the Burkes became too much for the Dwyers. The clans fought a fierce and bloody battle at a place called Slievaughn. The Burkes killed every last male adult of the Dwyer people. It is said that the mounds covering those who fell are still to be seen in the fields. And long afterwards, Slievaughn was known as Slievaughn Darrig, in remembrance of the blood that had been spilled there. With all the male leaders of their clan now slaughtered, the Burkes found themselves faced with Dermot's sister, Sheila Dwyer, or Sheila na Gcuaire. Sheila was already showing signs of the fierce woman she would be remembered as, for she continued the fight against the Burkes. The remaining Dwyers, mostly women and some young boys, made several attempts to conquer their foes under Sheila's leadership. But in a short time, defeat and extinction stared the outnumbered clan in the face. The chief of the Burkes at that time was Walter, a widower with two sons, Ulic and William. Some of the Dwyers from further afield came to Sheila's aid and helped to negotiate a peace between the Dwyers of Cullahill and the Burkes of Bursalee. The condition? Sheila would have to become the wife of Walter Burke. I can only imagine the hatred and fear this woman must have felt, transferred like property into the home and hands of a sworn enemy, forced to live with him as his wife and do his bidding. Ordinarily, intermarriages between warring clans were a matter regarded with the utmost severity by the Dwyer family. Most of the other Dwyers fled the district into Kilnamana to live in safety among their kinsmen. For Sheila, matters were different. All she could do was bide her time. After 4 or 5 years, Walter Burke, her husband, died. Walter bequeathed all his possessions to his wife. Thus, Sheila left his castle at Bursalee, a rich and powerful woman. And soon after his death, she moved back to her former stronghold at Cullahill Castle. A new era for the Dwyers was about to begin. By this time, Sheila had become an embittered, cruel woman. Stories of her cruelty, her wickedness, her lust, and her bloodthirst abounded for many years, becoming embroiled, I'm sure, more into folklore than memory. Yet the stories are worth talking about all the same. Ireland has an interesting tradition of bloodthirsty female leaders. Queen Maeve of Connacht and Gráinne Whéill, the pirate queen, being the most famous among them. Gráinne Whéill, indeed, could have been a contemporary of Sheila na Gcuaire. Is it possible that these women would have known of each other, even if they never met? I like to think so. Ireland's distances were vast at the time, but it has always been a small island. It's interesting to think about how these women so captured the folkloric imagination, how they retained their rule in a culture of storytelling so often weighted towards examining the heroic deeds of men. Perhaps rejoicing in her newfound freedom from a lover and master she detested, the stories of Sheila na Gcuaire suggest that she wasted little time in sampling what new delights were available to her in her position of supreme authority. Legend has it that she took a new man every night, and rarely did she find that her desire lasted past the following morning. There appears to have been no witty youth able to charm Sheila with stories to last 1,001 nights. Each man she lay with was put to death the following morning, in a seemingly endless streak. Barrels feature again in the accounts of how she killed them. It is said that she forced her lovers into barrels of molten tar, so that they were burned to death rather than impaled as they rolled downhill. Although Sheila appears to have had no qualms about her own sexual behaviour, she treated the transgressions of those close to her with the utmost severity. Sheila had a sister called Cait, who, according to one source, was described by Sheila as having had a moral relapse. other legends are less coy about Cauth's Inn. They say that Sheila's sister had in fact eloped with her stepson, Ulic, a Burke, you will recall, and probably regarded pretty poorly by Sheila, who was once under the mastery of him and his father. This marriage so displeased Sheila that she ordered both Cauth and Ulic to be brought to her castle, where she made them prisoners. Sheila determined that the pair should be executed, and it was in a manner which certainly shows off her creative abilities. She ordered that the couple be stripped naked and hung from the battlement of her castle with their heads facing downward. While in this defenceless position, the legend goes, Sheila ordered that boiling water, or in some stories boiling oil, be poured upon their bodies, scalding them to death as it dripped downward. The bonds of sisterly affection did not run deep in Sheila na Gwira's veins. Let's just leave it at that. I got another story of Sheila na Gwira from my own grandfather. It was said that she had a dog which she fawned over. The dog had puppies, and for Sheila, no ordinary scraps or dog milk were good enough for this brood. The women peasants in the area were already terrified of their queen, and likely became still more so when Sheila na Gwira handed out her dog's young puppies to each nursing woman nearby, that they might suckle on a far more princely feast than they would be likely to get in their milk dish. Maybe this story seems far-fetched to you, but actually humans nursing young animals was a far more common practice throughout history than one might be given to believe. It was used as both a way to sustain much-needed livestock of farming communities, and it was believed to be beneficial to the women themselves. Indeed, popular home medical books in Britain, Europe, and America recommended that women draw the breast by nursing a puppy or small animal right up to as late as 1825. Anyway, I'm getting distracted by a truly fascinating piece of medical history, which you can read more about in the links on unrealpodcast.com. The stories my grandfather tells about Sheila na Gwira suggest that she was rather more concerned about the welfare of her canines than she was about the peasant women over whom she ruled. Governing a castle and district, even one as small as Illay, required sizeable funds, and the means of acquiring them were seldom peaceful. Sheila, though, was certainly up to this task. On another occasion, Sheila is said to have ordered her forces to raid the residence of a nearby chieftain. The loot was placed in a strong room, and Sheila was gracious and generous in her praise that evening, awarding the raiding party the honour of joining her at breakfast the following morning. They supped heartily at her table, and when breakfast was over, Sheila asked that the men be taken into an adjoining room. Did these men know what they were walking into? Did they think more festivities awaited? Or had they, perhaps, grown wise to Sheila's doings by then, but had no escape from her fearsome actions? Well, whatever they felt, they hadn't long to feel it, for they met death in the adjoining room, at Sheila's orders. Sheila could not risk them telling the secret of her hidden treasure. Sheila na Gwira eventually met her own demise, and it was not in battle, but in the seat of her rule at Cullahill, and at the hands of one of her own soldiers, grown tired of her tyrannical ways. One morning, Sheila rose from bed. She lit a candle on the table in her room, and walked over to the window opposite her bed, to survey her lands at the opening of the day. Her window could be seen from the nearby Knockahorna Hill, and there an unnamed soldier was waiting with an eagle-like aim. As Sheila came to her window, he fired. A great cry was heard throughout the castle, and there, Sheila's lifeless body was soon found. Sheila was buried in Glenkeen Cemetery, and it seems unlikely that her tyrannical ways were mourned by many of the people who had once been under her power. But death was not necessarily the last we heard of the great Sheila na Gcuaire. In some stories, so bloody and heinous were Sheila's deeds that they could not help but seep into the pores of all that she touched. Some say that the mortar in the castle itself is mixed with blood, and all around the castle, the meadows are filled with humped ridges in the ground, said to be the resting site of many of her savagely slaughtered victims. People often suspected that Sheila had buried treasure nearby, and many have dug around the castle. But, so the stories go, every time they do so, the water nearby runs red, and people soon stop digging for fear of finding human bones. Sheila na Gcuaire was a fascinating character. Her deeds, though terrible, surely deserve to have been better remembered. It's a mark of both the incredible power of oral history that we have any recollection of the lives of the Burkes and Dwyers who ruled the area at all, and the fatal limitations of oral history that mean we can never fully grasp the whole story in its true detail. Sheila na Gcuaire is an example of an oral story which hasn't spread. It has remained tied to the district of its origins, lasting through the centuries, yet staying close to home. And as the people who told it pass on, the tales themselves move closer and closer to extinction. Why, though, is so little known about this terrible but fascinating ruler? How did such a dark and twisted tale all but die out in the mouths of the old in Bursaly? Well, one reason, I think, is that Sheila na Gcuaire and Cullahill Castle are actually not that uncommon as names in Irish folklore. There have been several famous Irish Sheilas throughout time, and to be honest, all of their stories are worth telling. There is a Sheila na Gcuaire, recorded in Canadian folklore, as a Connacht princess who was kidnapped by pirates on her way to a French convent. She married her pirate kidnapper, Gilbert Pike, and they settled together in Newfoundland. Again in Connacht, there was a Sheila na Gcuaire, also of noble birth, who has been recorded in Songs That Ache for Ireland, the Kathleen ni Houlihan of music at that time. Our own Sheila na Gcuaire spawned ballads as well, of course, which were often heard in cities and fairs throughout Munster until at least the mid-19th century. However, these songs were so seditious that travelling musicians were often arrested for singing them. Unsurprising. There is even another Cullahill Castle in County Leash, which itself contains a Sheila, though one of stone rather than life. It bears one of the best Irish examples of the grotesque carving known as a Sheila na Gig. The podcast Our Sexual History did an excellent episode on the Sheila na Gigs a while back. Well worth a listen if you're interested in learning more. But there's also the more mundane possibility. Perhaps Sheila na Gcuaire, as we knew her anyway, simply never existed. While oral sources suggest, as I have done, that the fighting between the Burkes and the Dwyers continued right up until Sheila's marriage to Walter Burke, written records suggest the truce may have happened long before then. Sheila and Walter's marriage could even have been a happy one, the myths of her cruelty merely stories dreamt up by those who detested seeing a woman in power. Whatever may have happened to bring about a truce between these warring clans, the Burkes and the Dwyers stood together in later battles for Irish and Catholic freedom, along with the other families around the area, the Ryans, the Mars, the Carrolls and the Kennedys. They were, of course, more than equally met by the stern opponent of Cromwell. And when the Commonwealth Acts and the Acts of Settlement and Explanation of the 1650s and 60s were applied, land confiscation and spoil took a drastic toll on Tipperary, and the land which had formed the subject of so much infighting in years before was removed from Irish control for many years to come. So perhaps the simple fact is that there were too many Sheilas in too eventful a period of Irish history, at a time when too many people relied on the easily confused oral tradition for their records. Sheila was simply subsumed. Ireland's allegiance to the powerful and violent feminine, manifesting in more easily recognisable figures, such as Gráinne Whale and Queen Maeve of Connacht. But that's what I like about this story. It crystallises so much of what's incredible about the richness of Irish mythology. It is so compressed, so stuffed with tales of heroes and heroines, villains and victims, that sometimes even stories and characters as good as these can become lost, only to emerge like bright gems for one willing to peer close enough, catching you by surprise as you uncover yet another fold of mystery in the land you think you know. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. I'd like to thank Eugene Short, Derek Ryan, who runs the Tipperary Antiquarian blog and Facebook page, and my grandfather, Con Ryan, for their invaluable help in researching the elusive tales of Sheila na Gcuaire. You can find links to the sources and further reading on unrealpodcast.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving a rating or review on iTunes. You can keep up to date at UnrealPod on Twitter or Facebook. The theme song is The Butterfly by Slaunta, and you can find links to the music from today's episode on my website. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another fascinating legend. And until then, Gonairí on Bóthar Leat.